All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Friday, July 27th. Almost said another sport. Friday, July 27th. I'm Doug Norrie. That
James Davis, that's kind of fascinating that you almost said another sport because it seems like it's been solidly 10 months since we talked about any other sport.
It has been, and I think that like I just go on, like I start thinking about other things as I'm saying that sometimes, and if my brain's even so for instance, I've been thinking a lot about NFL lately because I spent like all day writing about and researching NFL stuff, so I wonder if like that was just had sort of seeped into my brain and then I got confused for a second. Who knows, dude? I don't know.
Freudian slip, enough of these things. Parapraxis, as it's called.
I don't know what that means, but I'm sure I can look it up later.
Freudian Wikipedia, slip.
Wikipedia, whatever you're talking about. Whoopsie. From DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to be optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, members-only chat room, user-only, member-only content coming soon. Going to have some stuff going up, and we're going to start moving some of our content into members-only. So be around for all that. It's free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after. DraftKings has their first NFL pricing of the season up, so hope to be able to turn over some projections very, very early. Nothing, can't really make anything of them projections to start the season. Hopefully either today or early next week. So a lot going on in the world of sports. I feel like I have a lot to talk about. I have like a hubcap story that I kind of want to tell. It has nothing apropos of nothing to do with the podcast, so maybe I'll wait on that.
Hold on,
one.
You're just going to tease the hubcap story and then leave our listeners just like,
well, I took my car, I'm going to give you the short version. I took my car in for an oil change yesterday and a tire rotation, and when I got a mile away to pick my daughter up, all four of my hubcaps were off the car. And so, and I took it back, and it's like, I don't have like a great, like high performance vehicle or anything like that, but all four of the hubcaps were off the car, and I took it back to the guy and I said, what's up? You know, I was like, he's like, well, what do you think happened? I said, well, I don't know, man. I've driven this car for like 100,000 miles with all the hubcaps on. I took it here, and 10 minutes later, all four of them off. So I'm just going
to
go
and like
say
it's me.
I feel like I'm going to vote your bad on this one. Like, I don't really know exactly what your guys did. Anyway, all four hubcaps have been recovered and put back on the car. So that was the short version of my hubcap story. It took a lot longer than that, and there were a lot more curse words used than I am using in the retelling of it. Nah, I know. It's like kind of off-brand for me to just like – Stark. I'll be honest about this one though. I didn't curse at the guy. I did feel like it was an honest mistake, and I tried to impart that on him that I thought it was. I was like, it'd be worse.
Yeah,
it's like traveling
for a wedding and not bringing your belt. You know, it's like annoying.
Well, you know what? It's like one of these things. Like I was actually trying to equate it to like what we do in business, and I was like, it's one thing where, you know, if you're doing projections, let's say, and if you make a mistake on one guy, then that's just like an honest mistake, right? If you make a mistake on every guy, then it's just like you're doing.
You're doing something wrong.
Exactly. Like, so I was just trying to, I don't know. I was trying to equate it. I was trying to be really patient. Anyway, all four hubcaps back in the car now. All right. We are going to talk about the MLB Friday slate here. Full slate of games, 7 o'clock start, and a lot of good pitching here. I mean, we're going to talk about Scherzer and Sale right off the bat, but we also have guys, you know, Greinke, Carrasco, Bumgarner, Kershaw, Archer. There's a lot of good arms going here. Also got a game going in Coors. I mean, I'm going to actually throw Mike Foltynewicz in there too, because his numbers have been very good. He ranks right up there with some of those guys, maybe even be better than some of the guys that I just mentioned based on some of his numbers. So some really good pitchers going, but let's start with Scherzer and Sale, because they are around the same price on DraftKings. They are Sale's 400 cheaper. That has to be just a matchup thing. It has to be like the algorithm has to be weighting the Miami matchup for Scherzer. But Scherzer is 1,300 less on FanDuel. I wrote up the picks last night, and one thing I like to do, this is why I think, tell me if you agree with this, because I think it's one reason I like having a lot of different DFS sites is that pricing differences on each allow you to just buy at the best price, you know, like being able to buy stocks at different exchanges. I mean, you can't really do that, but for different prices, I guess you can buy like, you know, some crypto at different prices on different exchanges. But do you like that this happens? Like, do you think this is an opportunity to like maybe just play Scherzer on FanDuel and Sale on DraftKings and just feel good about it rather than having to do what might come down to a coin flip just based on raw projections?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at this pretty carefully and cut it as many ways as I could, and it was like really hard to justify anything other than simply taking the guy who's cheaper. I mean, so first the matchups, I think when you break them down in your mind, in one's mind, I guess I should say, I don't know what's in your mind there, Doug, but in one's mind, Miami against a righty should be a better matchup than the Twins against a lefty. But the Twins have actually been quite horrible against left-handed pitching this season. And I mean, the tail of the tape here is actually super, super close. So Miami has a 302 WOBA and a 23% strikeout rate against righties. So that's really bad. I mean, the bottom five team in the league against right-handed pitching there. The Twins have a 23.4% K rate, so slightly higher, and a 297 WOBA against lefties. And so that matchup actually just slightly favors the Twins. I'm going to give the park in favor of Scherzer here. It's tough. I mean, Miami's just one of the better pitchers' parks in the league, so that favors him. And then when you break down the two pitchers themselves, Sale is just quite simply better. I mean, he strikes out more guys, almost a full guy per nine. He walks fewer guys. He generates more ground balls. Like, just from top to bottom, he is just better than Max Scherzer. Max this season, he is just an excellent pitcher, and he's going to be one of these guys that can break xFIP with stuff like, you know, he's going to always have a low BABIP. He's not going to give up a lot of home runs in spite of, like, I mean, he's had a 35% ground ball rate for literally six seasons in a row or something. And just, like, for whatever reason, still doesn't give up a ton of home runs. So excellent pitcher, obviously. But Sale, quite simply, better. If they were the same price, I think we would just play him. So on DraftKings, it's pretty easy to go in his direction. On FanDuel tonight, though, I do think the savings on Scherzer frees up just enough money that that's where I'd want to lean. Because even if you just play Scherzer, it's not like you can break the bank on bats. And we do have a lot of attractive bats that we're going to want to target tonight. So I like the hedge.
11.5 is just too cheap for Scherzer, I think, here. I think it's I get encouraged when I see things like this, because I think the decision-making, for cash games at least, becomes a little easier. And I agree with every single point you made about just Sale is just basically the best pitcher in baseball at this point. He's separated himself. These numbers are completely ridiculous. Yeah. And these are like Pete Kershaw kind of numbers, where especially with the strikeouts, the over 13 Ks per nine, sustaining that for basically the last 350 innings is just... It's rarefied air that he's entered into now, and in the American League East of all places, where you're just going to have, obviously you're going to have to run to the Yankees. I mean, the Orioles stink this season, but there are offenses here. It's not great to pitch in the AL East just in general, especially with the park. So just the fact that he's been able to do this for two straight seasons, completely ridiculous. And I'm just glad Scherzer is $1,300 less, and we'll just take the slight savings on Sale over at DraftKings. Now after that. So I think you have to play one of those two. Those guys are just so far above the rest of the group in terms of just raw point projections. And they just rank, pretty high up there in just points per dollar. Like, they're just decent values, even at these elevated price points, simply because they're so awesome. So I think you're playing one of the two on DraftKings. That's what I mean. Like, everything works in their favor. I mean, at one point last night, they came down a little bit, but Scherzer was something like the third best points per dollar overall guy in the system when I started the write-up, and to see that at his price point is like, you never ever see that, right? Like, sure on the raw points or whatever, but the fact where he's also just like kind of mispriced maybe on FanDuel, that's sure. Not something you see when you sort by that. So anyway, after him though, where do we want to go for DraftKings starting pitcher two? There are guys, more than 10,000. It's going to be very difficult, I think, to roster, something like half your salary cap against for just two pitchers on the slate. There's some guys in the 9,000 range. There's some cheap guys. I mean, it's still early in the day. These things are always subject to change. Let's talk about some of these other pitchers and where we might go in terms of pivots.
Yeah, so, I mean, DraftKings is really tricky because the guys that fall into that really cheap bucket all have some pretty huge question marks to me. And then the guys, like, a step above that, I would really, really like to play two good pitchers. And I know you can't always get what you want, Doug, especially when you're number one pitcher comes in at 13.5, but if you can get a guy like Greinke, great pitcher at San Diego, the best possible matchup for a pitcher, that would be really fun. That would be so much fun. I wish I could just do that, but
oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, it will be tough to allocate the 10.7. I mean, even Bumgarner pitching at home in San Francisco, 9,300, maybe you can go down and touch that, going up against Milwaukee and Chase Anderson, again, another excellent pitcher's park. If you can't go up that high, things start to get pretty dicey. What our system is considering at the moment is going with one of these super, super cheap guys and just hoping to catch lightning in a bottle. So, can you think about Ivan Nova and his, complete lack of stuff, but also the fact that he doesn't walk anyone? Can you run him out there today going up against the Mets at home in Pittsburgh? And all of this is, just considering the price point. Can you consider Chase Anderson pitching in San Francisco against a relatively toothless Giants offense? That's kind of what our system is considering right now. I really, really hope that we can peek our heads just a little bit higher, because up in that next tier, there are some just like actual good pitchers that are not, like, on a normal night wouldn't break your bank. Even thinking about Nick Pivetta against Cincinnati, that's where I would have a great deal more comfort if we could get just a little bit better pitcher than those bottom scraping guys.
Yeah, I agree. And right now, that next tier of guys, I'm going to put that next group of guys. Pivetta is definitely there at 8,200, has strikeout stuff. Park is not doing him any favors. Cincinnati's a terrible place to pitch. The wind is blowing out. He's a slight favorite right now, but he's not really getting anything close to the win points at only a minus 115 favorite. That's what's holding his projection. He's got blow-up potential in him, too. This guy's been feast or famine at times. Like, he's gotten completely blown up, but he has the stuff, and he has good K numbers. I think if in a perfect world, I was hoping this would happen, you know, before I updated everything. I was kind of hoping it would default to a guy like maybe like Archer at 9,500, just right below that 10,000 range. His price, I feel like, is still a little low for what he can do because he's been slowly ramping up the pitch count as he came back from the disabled list. But his last game was by far his best of the season. He had something like 12 Ks in six innings or something like that. And he gets to face an Orioles team that was bad with Machado, and then Machado's in Los Angeles now, and so they are just one of the worst offenses in all of baseball. Very righty heavy, and their lefties like Davis just strike out all the time. Like Davis is, I think I mentioned in this podcast, like Chris Davis is headed for an all-time terrible season. Like there's no other way to cut it. He is, his WAR right now, which is cumulative, is already like the worst of the last decade, and with only room to fall, basically. like the WAR has just not been getting better at any point. So I think if he's going to end up as being historically bad. I mean, what do you think, Archer, here? Like, does he fall into that class of sub 10,000? You know, you're going to have to sacrifice some of the bats, but maybe not all of them on a night where the other are definitely a lot of bats to play. Does he check enough boxes? And the other guy I want to talk about is Madison Bumgarner, who is coming off his worst start of the season. Also is a guy that's kind of been coming back from an injury. Where do these two guys fall for you, 95 and 9,300 respectively?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately I'd still lean Bumgarner in that equation just because, yeah, Archer working his way back from injury, 3 1/3 innings, 4 1/3 innings, and then up to the 6 last week, but that's mostly because it was just going perfectly from a strikeout perspective.
Real quick, I want to pause there on one thing. I did look at this last night. The pitch counts were ramped up in each one, and he reached 101 pitches in the last game. So for that one, he went like 70 pitches, 85 pitches, 101 pitches. Like, does that make a difference?
It does make a difference. I looked at that as well. I guess, like, I sometimes get wary, though, of guys that are still working their way back from, you know, injuries that could be potentially pretty scary for a team with a lot invested in him. And the fact that he just was striking, like, it's going to be a lot tougher to take a guy out, period, when he's got 13 Ks against zero walks, you know, like,
sure.
It's just hard to justify that in your mind. Like, your managing reflexes, it might fall off your radar that he's up to that many pitches or something. Not to say that it's impossible for him to get back up there, and he's certainly a value here, but I just feel like Bumgarner is probably a little bit safer of a commodity here. I think both, you know, both are going to carry their own risk, because you're really, the risk here is less so the pitchers and more so what you have to do with the bats. And so basically on DraftKings, it's this equation tonight of where are you going to take your risk? Because, like, I think if I'm just going to go expensive, I might just go the whole way and just take a guy like Greinke against San Diego. Because, you know, if you compare him to any of these other two guys, I'm getting, like, none of that risk at all. No question marks about the innings, averaging more than 6 innings to start this year. The stuff has improved over last year. Best possible matchup in all of the majors, essentially, and the best possible park. Like, I think if I'm just going to be spending 9,700, I'll spend 10,700 instead and just go all the way up. Like, I wonder if these two guys just fall in that kind of odd middle ground where you're not really getting the payoffs that you could by spending a little bit more, and you're exposing yourself to some of the risk too. So I'm just not sure.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Like, my concern with Bumgarner, I'm with you on Greinke. I think that Greinke, if you're going to do it, just go double expensive. I'm probably would end up falling there. Again, you're going to need to take major sacrifices with the bats. My concern with Bumgarner is that the strikeouts just really haven't come back for him. He was never a big strikeout guy to begin with. He was, I guess I take that back. Through 2016, he was like 9.5. Then last year it falls off a cliff to 8.2, and this year it's just gone even worse. He's down under 8 strikeouts per 9 with the walks up, coming off an injury, coming off his worst game of the year. He walked 6 guys, struck out 5. There's just major concerns with Bumgarner at this point. I sometimes get a little caught in between with a guy like him that has such a long track record of just being such a good pitcher, and he was for so many years. And eventually you have it until you don't, with a pitcher, and the day you have it, you kind of never comes back. Sometimes you get like a Verlander case where it looks weird, and then all of a sudden the guy comes back and strike out a lot of guys. More often than not, you have some injuries, you get a little older. Man, how old do you think Madison Bumgarner is, by the way? Don't look.
Ooh, 32 was the number that came into mind.
28 years old. That's a lot younger than I thought he was.
Yeah,
I would have guessed.
With some of these guys that come up early, like
he must have just come up. He came up basically when he was like 20 years old. Anyway,
yeah,
he's like still very young.
Yeah, he's just been around such a long time.
1,500 innings on his arm, though, and again, the injury concern. So I think there's just a lot of question marks in this range, and I think we've probably not done a ton to address them except to say you're going to maybe probably just need to pick a path. Like, you're going to need to say, I just have to get some of these bats, and we're going to talk about some of the bats that are in great spots here. The Coors guys are, and there's some other ones for sure. Some injury stuff that's going to move some guys up into good lineup positions for some other teams. So I think you're going to make a choice. Am I going to completely punt it away? You know, with like the aforementioned guys like Nova and Anderson that have some contextual things working in their favor, but not really the actual stuff themselves. Or do you say, screw it, Greinke, Archer, one of these guys, and I'm just going to know that I'm just going to have to just play probably at least one, maybe two total bums,
yeah, guys,
in
like
the lineup somewhere.
And stuff.
Right. I think there's no other way around it. You can't pay 13.5 for one pitcher and 10.7 for another. Now you've allocated more than half your salary to pitching, sure, and not just play on DraftKings some guy like that's batting eighth. Yeah, like he's like a Sean Rodriguez type or something like that. All right, before, let's get into some of the bats, because there's definitely some teams in good spots here. Hit us up with a sponsor, then we'll talk some stacks.
Right on, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go and play the salary cap games like you're used to, but without all the sharks just chewing up all the entries and eroding the edge to nothing. So we really like them for our users that play between, like, say, $5 and $100 per night. It's a really great place to go and allocate that amount of your bankroll. Fantasy Factor also runs really fun free rolls all throughout the summer and in the fall. I'm sure they'll be ramping right back up to run a ton of free rolls there too. So now's a great time to go check them out, get acquainted with the software, and get ready for what should be a pretty big football season. That's FantasyFactor.com.
All right, let's talk some stacks here. We have a game in Coors. The run line for this game is very high. I just clicked off the tab. I want to say it's 12, but while I'm fumbling around for whatever the over-under is, it is clearly the highest of the slate. We have two lefties going, and anytime you have a lefty going in Coors, you basically have to talk Arenado. I mean, Arenado's numbers against lefties over the last two, it's 11.5. Arenado's numbers over the last two seasons against lefties. So I wrote this last night. His OPS, the difference between his OPS against lefties and the next closest guy is something like 140 points difference, which is the same. That's the Stanton. That's the same difference of like Stanton down to like the 11th guy or something like that. He's just that much better. His numbers, he's a 538 WOBA against lefties over the last two seasons. A 225
up like,
WRP.
It's like Barry Bonds. That would like look suspicious for Barry Bonds if he pulled it out.
Now, he's been getting lucky, and BABIP. He's got over a 400 BABIP, but in that platoon. But he's only 4,500 on FanDuel.
This is
where you have Scherzer at 11.5. Well, I think you're already getting a pretty massive discount on him. I mean, at Arenado, I hate to overpay a course because I do know
you're not overpaying a course.
But do you think that's an overpayment? I think that's just like a fair price for him, basically. He might just be an underpriced.
I mean, we've played Mike Trout at 4,900 in Anaheim. You're just gonna play him at that price. He might be the highest owned batter on the slate. It's hard to believe that he won't be. I mean, that price is just too cheap. He's a known commodity. You have to play him.
Yeah, he's a much more expensive, obviously, on DraftKings, where the pricing is tighter. He's 5,500. That's still not out of the realm of possibilities, I don't think, especially if you just go middle tier or below for pitching. I think he is definitely – there's a guy to pay up for. This is it, it's him, and it's really kind of not all that close. He's just that good. Minaya is a lefty that isn't terrible, and just not, you know, Coors can turn even the most average pitcher into basically hitting batting practice. So I think if you're going to pay up for one batter on the slate and punt the rest of them, I think it's pretty clearly Arenado. And the other team I just want to focus on real quick before we get into who some of the better stacks are is the Yankees, because with Judge is going to miss at least 3 weeks, or it might miss a month after getting hit on the wrist last night. That moves. It's so brutal. Did you just say, was that an audible sigh from you?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I just hate when guys are. It's just so dumb luck. Like, there's nothing you can do differently about that. It's just like the dumbest part of baseball that people just have to miss seasons because of bad luck. I mean, I guess like you can make an argument that this happens in all sports, like just random injuries and stuff. But there's something particularly about just getting your wrist destroyed
yes.
by the baseball. That I just it just gives me the heebie-jeebies.
And wrist injuries, and I can't remember if I said this off the pot.
It just kills your power too.
It's the very worst. It's one of the worst injuries you can have as a hitter. It's like it saps your power. Yeah. It takes a really long time to recover from. On your outward, in the you know most people just get writ. Excuse me, get hit on the guide hand out on that wrist because that's where you just get hit with the ball. It's destroyed guys' like seasons in terms of power. Trout had this wrist injury a couple years ago. Pedroia, I remember, went through a whole season where he was basically
whole careers. Howie Kendrick went from being like the next best thing ever and just like couldn't hit the ball out of the infield.
Right. So, and a guy like Judge, who has very, very small room for error just because of his body type. This is the kind of body type that does not typically age well in baseball. Your swing,
you have to hit home runs.
Exactly. Your swing is very long, and you're good for a while, and then all of a sudden it's too many moving parts for a guy that's this big. Anyway, it is gonna move people up in the lineup though. Stanton is probably gonna move up into the two spot. I think Hicks is probably gonna move into the cleanup spot here. Bird moves up a thing. So the Yankees are expensive, but we are getting a situation where everyone moves just about everyone moves up one spot in an order that and they're not really priced that way, and it just becomes more of a run distribution away from Judge. So like one of the ways we model is we just redistribute runs across a lineup, and when you have a guy like Judge in there, he's going to sap up a lot of the expected runs because he's just so good. If you keep the run expectation sort of the same, it's going to be a little lower without him for sure. You know, when guys like him or Harper or Trout are out of lineups, the expected run lines do drop a little bit. But redistributing his production over the entirety of the Yankee lineup is going to
You can't I think that's a little tricky. You can't redistribute his production, but I guess the idea would be that the opportunity it opens up just being in that lineup.
Yes.
Because obviously, like, I don't know. And if Vegas, like, doesn't move the line to account for Aaron Judge's being absent, it doesn't mean that everyone will suddenly be better or something. It's not like there's more carries to go around, but yeah, the slight tick up in at bats and understanding that those plate appearances in that part in the lineup are extremely valuable because you have guys like Stanton batting around you, you know? I hear what you're saying. I just don't want people to take it the wrong way.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, maybe I misstated it. And it's a shame, too, because you can actually sometimes, you can really see this accounted for in real time when the line is, so the line had not been released for the Yankee game early, like before this injury had been announced, so you don't get to see it. But if you watch lines move when a guy like Harper is out of the lineup, you'll see the Nationals just drop like a full half run or something like that in implied sure. totals, just because he's just that good. The same happens for the Yankees. It just doesn't happen. It isn't happening in this case because the line was released after he had been injured. So I'm not saying that it's not that his production gets redistributed equally. It's that you put it better than I did. Okay, well, let's move on. So So the Yankees, I do think, are a good spot, and I actually think some of these guys are coming pretty cheap. You're getting Gardner on the cheaper side. He was like $3,000. I think you get Hicks at $3,000 on FanDuel is very interesting. I don't think you're making a ton of concessions in terms of cash games of where you can go with your lineup. Like right now, our top lineup has Scherzer, has Arenado, has Stanton. This is on FanDuel, has Hicks. I mean, I don't feel like you're really punting away a position. Now, after those guys, and especially on DraftKings, what are some teams we can look at to start that might be coming in a little cheaper side? Because we are going to need to start saving somewhere.
Arg, matey, I'll be looking at the Pirates today. Why are you laughing? I thought we were on the same page. We were going to be doing, like, trying to spice up the podcast a little bit today.
Yeah, you did it. We'll talk off air about whether it worked or not. It was kind of, but I definitely appreciate the effort.
Arg, matey, I'm looking at Jason Vargas today. Well, for real though, I can't do that for very long. I'll tell you what I'm flummoxed by at the moment. Okay. Jason Vargas, guess how much he gets paid to pitch? He signed a contract this year, so this is the first year of a 2-year deal with the Mets. How much?
I'm not going to guess because I'm looking at it, but it's way more than you. It's way more than I would have guessed.
$8 million. $8 million. You could buy whole towns in Africa with this guy's money. So much money coming off a season where he had a 4.94 xFIP. Okay, so my beloved Mets go out. They sign him, and they're like, you know what? If we can lock in the 4.94 xFIP for 2 years, that's going to be worth $8 million to us. Unlucky for them, the xFIP has gone up, but really remarkable is this ERA. So this season, Jason Vargas has gone 37 2/3 innings, which is not very many innings, given that he's pitched 9 starts. But there's a good reason for that. He's given up 36 runs in 37 2/3 innings. So you heard that right. If he had given up 1 2/3 more runs, he would have exactly a 9 ERA. So that's really what I think everyone should be sweating tonight, tuning into this game to see if Jason Vargas can give up 2 more runs than his innings pitch. Because if he does, he'll be in that rarefied air. I mean, you just don't this is like straight up Little League style ERAs. And going up against a Pirates team that, you know, they're not priced very high because they're not very good. But when you're going up against a guy like Jason Vargas, who's giving up 2.63 home runs per nine inning, that's a lot. Giving up home runs on 21% of his fly balls, giving up a ton of fly balls in the first place, you have a dream spot. So not to say every team is going to go out and kill Jason Vargas, but every team so far this year has. And yeah, I'm going to be banking on that, especially like on DraftKings, where you're going to be paying up for pitching at least in the number one slot. You can easily start sliding several Pirates into the lineup alongside him. So, yeah, keep an eye on Josh Harrison. Likely be batting towards the top of the lineup against the lefty. And just fill in the gaps from there. Cervelli probably, you know, maybe in that five slot, something like that. I think you're going to be able to get Pirates, and you'll be able to get them for big tournaments too.
Just as a note, and I'm going to kind of guess at this, but I'm guessing I'm pretty close on this. The Pirates in like a league average matchup at home are something like 4.5 to 4.4 implied runs. That's going to be my guess. They're just that kind of offense. I look at these implied run lines a lot. That's probably around where they fall, maybe a little lower. Right now they're at 5.1, and it's just because of the matchup. This is how bad Vargas is. Like, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that this guy's the worst pitcher on the slate. It's not even that close. He, by the way, he has a 2-year thing. He has an option year, so I wonder if that's a player or a team option. If that's a player option, the Mets should just like fold their team and be relegated. I don't know. This guy is just as bad can be. So I'm really hoping it's a team option, but they're probably too stupid to have done that. Just keep an eye on the Pirates lineup. Like you said, they did bat Luplow at the top of the lineup last night. They move this thing around all the time, though. Like, Marte has been hurt, so it's unclear if he's going to be in the lineup. But they are a team that will move. They've moved around their lineup almost as much as any other team in baseball this season. Like, they had Bella lead off at times. So, and again, this is a reason you get a lot of these guys cheap. You put it at the top two. They're not very good. But another reason you get them cheap is that when their plate appearance expectation is moved, or opportunity is moved around so much over the course of the season, your just prices are going to remain on the lower side because you just don't get as many chances to produce as a team that maybe... Yeah, like the Mariners had the same exact lineup every single night. Those guys are just priced right. Like, those guys do not lefty, righty, doesn't matter. Same lineup every single night. Maybe the catcher between Freitas and Zunino changes, and that's like the only thing in their lineup that changes on any single night. Other teams like the Pirates do not do that. Okay, other teams besides these guys that are in good spots tonight. You know, obviously we mentioned a lot of good pitchers, which is probably going to cut down on some of the opportunity here, but are there other teams you see as maybe standing out in terms of teams that we can stack? And here, I guess we can just go pitcher independent, because I think if you're going to pivot off one of these big guys into one of the cheaper arms, you do have a little bit more money to spend in tournaments.
Yeah, sure. So, like, you know, another team, and they're not going to be a surprise to anyone just because they're an awesome offensive team, are the Astros. They're going up against Giovanni Gallardo, who, while he's not chasing history in the same way Jason Vargas is ERA-wise, his 7.18 ERA is still incredibly bad. And considering that three of his appearances this season have come out of the bullpen, perhaps it's even worse. His xFIP is actually worse than Vargas's at 5.08, and the 5.2 Ks per nine and the 4.21 walks per nine paint all the picture, a very accurate picture of just how terrible this guy is right now. And the Astros, obviously just an incredible hitting team in the first place. They've got guys that can punish terrible right-handed pitching, and the line is moving even further in their direction. So I think if you're going to go, especially if you go off-brand on pitching, you can afford a few Astros with some other big-name offenses going with the Coors game. You might be able to get them at lower ownership, and with a guy like Vargas, you know, just some truly, truly terrible pitching, you might be able to get them at a lower ownership than you might otherwise normally get.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, they have some Gallardo's is so bad. I wish they would.
One of the worst.
They put so many righties at the top of the lineup, but those are clearly their best guys. Like, it's hard to make a case to move Springer, Bregman, Altuve. But I could make the case to move Reddick into the cleanup spot over Gurriel. So I don't know why they don't do that as more, but they must know they're such a good analytics team that they must just see something that I don't. Maybe Gurriel's a little bit better against righties. So Reddick's always a guy I want to move up, because like, he spent a lot of last year hitting second, and that just hasn't been the case this year. So every game I wait for him to move up, and every game he doesn't, and I'm always just disappointed at not being able to get value. One other team that our system kind of likes, it's a little weird to what to make of them here, is the Cardinals against Mike Montgomery. So their run line is pretty low. Mike Montgomery, I always get a little confused about guys like this, because he has an elite ground ball rate. Right now he's at 54% on the season for ground ball rate. Last year he's coming off two straight seasons of 58% ground ball rate, and if you don't follow those numbers are awesome. That's just right. That's got to be some. Without looking and querying for right now, my guess is that's among the highest in the league of just producing ground balls. You just Absolutely. Especially over this 200 plus innings. But he doesn't strike anybody out. Like his K's, and this is how it usually works with ground ball pitchers. There's the rare guy, like, you know, peak Dallas Keuchel years. Actually, Brandon Webb would be a good example. Guys that just like actually struck out guys and produced a lot of ground balls. It doesn't really happen all the time. So when you see a guy that has low strikeout rates but such high ground ball rates. Tell me if I'm wrong here. The xFIP is always going to trail the ERA, usually, because you are just going to produce lower BABIPs, and that's going to not normalize. Like, am I making a case here? So I don't ever know. I want to stack against a guy like Montgomery because some of the rate stats look bad, but he just has outperformed his ERA. His ERA has outperformed the xFIP every single year because of the ground balls. Where does he kind of land for you in terms of a guy you can stack against?
Yeah, so it's tricky. So, I mean, I actually don't know the ground ball generation affects BABIP the way you describe normally. I think actually BABIP tends to rise the more guys are keeping the ball on the ground, just because like fly balls tend to produce super super low BABIPs. So that's why a guy like Scherzer, for instance, part of why he has such a low BABIP is if a guys are just like popping the ball in the air or flying out, those aren't just going to land in randomly. There's no seeing eye fly ball equivalent, versus on the ground, like just more stuff can happen. You can beat something out, you can poke it through the infield, but the thing is you can erase errors a lot more quickly, and you're going to give up a much lower slugging percentage in general. So like those big innings tend not to pile up in quite the same way. So when I see a guy like Montgomery, I tend to think that's going to limit upside. I don't necessarily love to stack against guys like that, because while people can have solid performances, like I'm not worried about the floor of the Cardinals, let's say, but the ceiling just seems to be kind of low. So I would be, especially on a night where you got multiple truly, truly bad pitchers going. I mean, Brad Keller is pitching against the Yankees. I mean, we discussed him as a stack already, but like he's really, really bad. Really bad. And you got Reynaldo Lopez going against the Blue Jays. Like, you've just got like some seriously bad pitching going, and I just don't know why I would want to risk it on Montgomery.
So here's the thing about Keller. So you brought up Keller, and I tend to agree with you, and I realize I probably misstated the BABIP thing. Although, and I wonder if I was just kind of turned around because Montgomery's just had a...
It's been the case for him.
He's been a crazy low BABIP for like 400 innings, a 270 BABIP. That is really...
Yeah, I mean,
really
also, by the way, if you generate really weak ground balls all the time, but then you tend to be just one of the best pitchers in the majors. Like, so, you know, it's like Dallas Keuchel can pull that off, and maybe Montgomery's there. You know, I can't say for sure, but...
So here's my question about Keller. If you look at Keller's numbers are like nearly identical to Montgomery's. So very low Ks. They strike out right around the same Ks, 5.6 per nine. They walk around 3 per nine. Keller walks a few more. Keller, like Montgomery, has an xFIP, a run higher than the ERA. But he also, now that it's a smaller sample size, only 30 innings, he's got a 57% ground ball rate. Like, if you look at these two guys, I mean, are they more similar than we might have thought on... I don't know, just like on balance. I'm with you that Keller seems like he stinks, and if that's the case against Montgomery, it seems like it might possibly be the case against Keller as well.
You're probably right. I think I do weigh them pretty similarly in my mind. I guess like for me, part of it is that Keller's bad, and also that the Yankees have some guys with incredible pop, where like St. Louis maybe doesn't bring that same level of fear into the hearts of people. And that being said, like, you know, you can probably get lower ownership percentage on them as well. But yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I actually haven't gone back and looked at Keller's minor league track record in quite some time. And he's been generating tons of ground balls throughout his stay in the minors too. I mean, 55% at high A, 56% at A ball. Like, double A went down to 50%, but that's still pretty high. Most people hear 50% think league average, but generating ground balls on 50% is excellent. So, but you did see with Keller... in the minors, anyway, he was having BABIP issues. So he hasn't had that in the majors. Like, his BABIP is quite low at 282. In the minors, 339 at AA, 321 at A ball or high A. And that's going to be more representative of a guy who generates a lot of ground balls. So, you know, not all ground balls are created equally. Hard hit ground balls are obviously much worse than little tricklers back to the mound. So I guess in my mind, Montgomery, given the longer track record of doing it in the majors, is still a safer bet. But you're right that they're probably closer than I see.
All right, on that note, I think we're going to get out of here. Big Friday in baseball, lots to discuss. You can go into the members-only chat room where people are discussing baseball stuff all day. We'll be there later in the day as we get into lineup building and you know where we're going to finally go with some of our lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. DFSR.com/MLB will get you started on that free 3-day trial, so go check that out. I think we're going to be off next week. We're both traveling over the course of the next week, so I don't think we're going to do any podcasts. We'll be back again a week after. We'll probably at that point try to get a football podcast up to start looking at the beginning of this season, at beginning of week one, as these sites start to come out with pricing and try to give like some over, I don't know, some very, very bird's eye view looks at some of that. So stay tuned. All right, buddy. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy next week. I'll talk to you soon.
Goodbye.